figure out that they're all empty. So in general, when it comes to graph, we will keep track of both. And it's a particular situation if we have O big O of m plus n, but if it were big O of n plus n squared, then it would be clear that we want to keep both because m can easily be less than n squared. But in very general, it really is a function of both parameters. And I mean, other examples, you may have many edges, but not as much as m, so you could have like square root of n edges in the graph. And again, just even finding those edges will take you a time which is at least proportional to the number of vertices, even if there are fewer edges than the number of vertices. But I agree that in situations where one parameter is redundant to the other, we're not going to bother in general. But most of the graph algorithms we're considering will be working on graphs where m is a lot bigger than n, and a lot smaller than n. And so for this reason, we keep track of all parameters. Now, what I started last time is the definition and explanation of red black crease. And in order to get there, I was first reviewing what you've seen before in binary search trees. And so I told you what a binary search tree is. And these are the operations that we expect to have efficiently implemented on a binary search tree. If we manage to keep the tree well balanced, we will be able to get all these operations in time, which is proportional to log n. Now, last time I covered all the operations except for insert and delete, so let me go back to that now. So the basic binary search tree insertion and deletion are pretty simple operations. They get a lot more complicated when we use red black trees. So let's just briefly revise them so that we can see how things change when we go to red black trees. Now, when we want to insert an element in a binary search tree, let's say we want to insert 13. Well, basically, the first phase of the algorithm is to search for that element. And of course, if the element is not already there, we will find the location where it would belong. So we would start from the root, compare 13 to the root. Since it's greater, we'll go to the right. We'll compare 13 to the root of the subtree, 18. Since it's smaller, we'll go to the left. We compare to the root, which is 15. And then we find out that this subtree is empty, which means that the location where 13 would have been found had it been in the tree would be here on the left child. So this search path is going to end at 15, and we're going to realize that 13 would be there if it were. And so we're going to insert it exactly in that place. Okay, so this is how we do it. If we want to insert a new node Z in the tree T, we first set Y to be nil and X to be the root of the tree. Now, the first little part of the algorithm is just walking down a path in the tree. So to locate where Y, the parent of the new node, is. And so we're just searching until X is nil. And when X reaches nil, it means that its parent, Y, so we're going to keep a relation between X and Y so that Y is always the parent of X. And so in this little loop, we keep this relation so that when we're done, X is going to be nil, and the parent is going to be the last value of X right before that. So this little loop just walks down the tree, starting at the root, saving Y to be the previous X each time around, and then comparing the key of the new node with the key that we seek. If the new value is smaller, then we move down on the left-hand side, and if the value is greater, we move down to the right-hand side, and we keep going, so that when we terminate this loop, X is going to have reached a leaf, well, an empty space, nil, and Y is going to be the parent that existed such that the left or right child of that parent is going to be the new parent of the new node Z. Okay, so in this example, we would walk down until Y ends up here and X ends up as a nil, as the left child of 15. Then we start constructing, adjusting the tree accordingly. We set that the parent of node Z is going to be Y, so we're allocating that Z is going to be the child of Y. If Y is nil, then it means that we have not actually met anything down the road. We are still at the root of the original tree. So if that's the case, then we say that the root of the tree is Z, and we're done. And otherwise, we're going to compare the key of the new node Z to the key of Y. If Z belongs to the left of Y, then we set that the left child of Y is Z. And if Z belongs to the right of Y, then we set that the right child of Y is Z. So we use this test to figure out whether Z belongs to the left or to the right of its parent. Okay, so in this example, this is where we reach looking for 13, and once we have reached here, we're just going to assign 13 here. We're going to set that the parent of 13 is 15. We're going to set that the left child of 15 is 13, and we're done. Any question? Now, we're going to see that again by the end of today's class in the context of red-black trees. We're going to all feel happy that we saw this recently. All right. Deletion is the more complicated operation, even for just binary search trees, but it gets even worse for red-black trees. So deletion will be realized in one of four cases. So the goal is to remove a certain node Z that we have identified from the binary search tree. And we're going to consider different cases. The case where the Z is the root, the case where Z is a left child of a node Q, and the case where it is the right child of a node Q. And we're going to break down these cases as follow, and we're going to study all four cases one by one. So I'm not going to go through exactly what those are, but we're going to go through each one of them individually. But this one is essentially when the node Z has no left child. This is when the node Z has a left child but no right child. This is the case where Z has two children. And a special condition that its right child is its successor Y. And this is like the most general case where Z has two children, but where its successor is not Y and is somewhere further down in the right subtree. So these are the four cases we're going to consider. And we'll see each one how we did. So the first ones are very simple. So this one is if you have a node Z with no left child and some right subtree which could be arbitrary, including nil or whatever you like. Well, in this case, because this node has no left child, we can just paste this up instead of z, and we're done. So the left child of R will remain the left child of R, the right child of R will remain the right child of R. Because there's no left child here, we can just ignore Z and paste R instead. So that's the simplest of all these cases. When the node has no left child, we just paste its right child instead. Now the second case is symmetric. It's essentially that if the node has no right child but has a left child, now the breakdown is first test for the left child and then check for the right child, so that the case where both children are empty could fit in either of them, but the way we organize them, it falls into case A. So the case with two children that are nil falls into case A. And the case B is the left child cannot be left. So in this case, we do exactly as we did before. This Z here, we can just delete it. Because it doesn't have any right child, we can just paste the child 15 instead. And this does it. It gives us a new binary search tree satisfying the definition. And the deletion just got us to drop 17 and move that up. Now, if neither children are empty, so I'm still trying to delete Z, and I'm in a context where the left child of Z is not empty, and the right child of Z is not empty. But I'm putting the extra condition that its right child is its successor, Y, and we give a name to Y's right child, we call it X. Now notice that saying that the left child of Z's parent is nil is equivalent to saying that Y is the successor of Z. Okay, because the binary search tree relation establishes that all the nodes in the right subtree under Z are all greater or equal to Z. However, if this child has no left children, it also means that all the nodes underneath this one in the right subtree are all greater or equal to this one, which implies that this one must be the smallest, which is greater or equal to 15. Because if there were any one smaller, they would have to be in the left tree below Y. This is a condition that we assign here, that its right child is its successor, is really the same condition as saying that the left child of Y is nil. And we're going to take advantage of that. That's exactly what we're going to take advantage of. We're going to take advantage of the fact that this is nil, and therefore, the left child of this can be used to paste this left child of 15 instead, and we can take the 17 and promote it up instead of 15. So that's exactly what we're going to do. We replace Z by Y, and we set Y's left child to be what used to be the left child of Z that we called L. So this part remains here. This part is promoted up here, and whatever its left children was nil. And so it becomes L, which is what the left child of Z used to be. Okay, so we're just taking advantage of this nil here to promote the 17 up, this Y up, and everything else remains the same. Now the last case is the generalization of this to arbitrary location of y, the successor of z. So in the last case, y doesn't have to be right underneath z, but it's somewhere down in the left subtree under z's right child. And this y, if you remember, because it's the successor, is going to be the leftmost node that you can encounter walking down from this r. So if you want to find the successor of z, you walk down one step to its child r, and then as far left as you can until you hit a nil. And when that happens, then this node was a successor. Okay, so this is the general rule we saw last time. To find a successor, go through your right subtree and find the node as far left as possible in this right subtree, and that node is the successor. So this is the last case. Z has two children, neither of them being nil, and the successor of Z is called Y, and it lays down somewhere below the right child of Z that we call R, and this Y lays down somewhere below that R, further down in the tree. So the case that we just did was that Y was exactly where R sits, and so this last case is when Y is further down than this R. Okay, so this picture shows us all the nodes we need to know about in order to re-establish how they relate to each other, and so to delete Z from this. So we're going to do it as follows. We're going to break down the tree in two parts. We're going to keep the ZL part as it was, and we're going to promote Y to be as Z was in relation to R. So I'm moving what was here, the Z, I'm going to substitute it by its right child, X. Because this one has no left child, I can replace it by its right child, and that will not make anything go bad. Okay, so wherever this Y is, I'm just going to promote this X instead. So that's what I did here. So underneath R, where Y used to be, I will now have X and everything under X belonging here. So I'm basically removing Y from the right subtree, and I'm promoting its child X in its place, and that doesn't mess up the binary search tree relation. And then I paste this Y at the top of the subtree, which used to have R as its root, and I put it here, and because it's the successor of Z, it's the smallest value of all those in the right subtree, and so therefore 19 is still a right child of this Y. And then after doing these two little changes, I can now get rid of Z exactly as I did before. This is now a case where I want to replace Z by a child which has no left child. And so we just paste it here instead. So I'm just going to paste this, get rid of Z, and get that the left part has never changed. The Z has been replaced by its successor. That successor has been replaced by its right child. And everything else, well, what used to be R, the right child of Z, is now the right child of Y. And it works fine because Y was a successor of Z, and therefore whatever the right child of Z was also fits now as the right child of this Y, which is a successor. All right, so this is a two-step process that transforms this fix things around the y below here, and then merge that, replacing z, and we're done. And so all the possible cases are actually covered by these four cases, either z has no left child, or z has a right child, or z has two children, but its right child is its successor, or in the last case, it has two children, and its right child is not its successor. So basically, in all cases, we find a nil somewhere that we can exploit, so to put a subtree there that we didn't have before, and that allows to replace the node for the union. Okay, so formally, to write the binary search tree deletion, we use a little external process called transplant. Transplant is used to replace a node U within a tree by another node V, typically from that tree as well. And T is passed in as a parameter just in case it turns out that the node we are substituting happens to be the root of the tree. And so if we do substitute a node U such that its parent is nil, it means that the node we are now substituting or transplanting is the root of the tree, in which case we want to set that the root of the tree is now going to be V, the new node. Okay, so I'm going to paste V instead of U, and if it happens that U was the root, then the new root is going to be V. Now, otherwise, if it's not the root, then we're going to check if U was the left child of its parent or the right child of its parent. So if it were the left child of its parent, then I'm going to set the left child of U's parent to be V. So before, the left child of U's parent was U. And now I'm going to say that the left child of U's parent is now V. And if I'm on the right side, I'm going to say that the right child of U's parent is V. So those two possibilities correspond to setting the parent, the link from the parent down to U to point into V instead. And once this is done, the parent is now pointing to V, but we want V to point at the parent as well. So if V is not nil, if V is not the nil pointer, then we can say that the parent of V is going to be the parent of V. And once we've done one of these two and that, we have set the pointer from the parent to V and from V to the parent, and we're done. Now, we write this separately because the algorithm is going to use that four times. So writing that code in four times would have been quite a mess. So this is what the pre-deletion algorithm looks like. I give you a tree T and a node Z to be deleted. This is not a key. So I'm not asking you to remove a node containing key number 17. I give you a link to the node. So if you're given a key and you want to find where it is in the tree before that, well, it's up to you. You have to use the code to find where it is in the tree, and then that Z is the location of that node. Okay, so the four cases that I described, A, B, C, D, are all broken down along here. The first case, A, is when the left child of Z is empty, then you can transplant the right child of Z instead of Z. This was case A. Case B is if the left child is not empty, but the right child is empty, then you can transplant the left child of Z instead of Z. Else, we are here only in cases where neither the left child is empty nor the right child is empty. So starting here at 5, we're dealing with the cases where both children exist. So in this case, we find Y to be the successor of Z. And the successor of Z is the minimum in the right sub-tree. So Y is going to return us, is going to now contain the location of the successor of Z. If that Y is the child, the immediate child of Z, in other words, if Y's parent is equal to Z, then we're going to skip this part. And in all cases, we're going to process this way. So in a sense, the breakdown of case C and D is a little bit artificial. The only difference between case C and D is that case C is a special case of D where the path from Z to its successor is trivial. It's just one step down. Whereas the others have longer, and so this part here is to handle fixing the subpart under the tree minimum, which is a successor, and if it's the immediate child, then we don't have to do that. Okay, so this part, 6 to 9, handles the case D, where the parent of Y is not Z. So in this case, we substitute the child, the right child of Y that we called X in the previous slide. We're going to promote that instead of Y. And we're going to set Y to be the parent, the root of the subtree, which is currently under Z. So when that's the case, we're going to set the right child of Y to be the right child of Z. And we're going to set the parent of the right child of Y to be Y. Yes, so this is what used to be called the right child. So Y dot right here is the same as Z dot right. So Y dot right dot P is the parent of what was the right child of Z before, and now I make this Y, which means that from this point on, I have reassigned a new node Y to be the subroot of the right subtree of Z. Now, once I've done that, I'm exactly in the same case as when Y is the immediate right child of Z. Because now, this case has modified the right subtree under Z into exactly the same structure as when the successor is the immediate child. And so when Y is the immediate child, right child under Z, then I just assigned the left child of Y to be the left child of Z, and the left child of Y's parent to be Y, so that the parent of that child is Y instead of being Z, which is what it was before. Okay, so this last part deals with cases C and D altogether. Now this is the stuff that's going to be interesting to the left. All right. Now, let me tell you about red black trees. So the purpose of red black trees is to get binary search trees that will maintain a good balance. Ideally, there always exists some balanced binary search tree of height logarithmic, which where the height is exactly the logarithm base 2 of the number of nodes. Now, red black trees are not going to be that good, but very close. We're going to show that red black trees will have height which is at most twice the number of nodes. So it's not perfect, but in the Go notation it's the same. We're going to get no more than twice the number of nodes. The logarithm of twice the number of nodes as height. And so we're going to achieve that by defining conditions on red and black nodes. And we're going to use a simple operation that we call left rotate and right rotate to reorganize the content of the tree from time to time. So the way we're going to maintain the height is by enforcing two properties. And this is what I'm going to define in a few minutes. It's a red-black property. A red-black tree must satisfy two properties. And fortunately, none of these properties get affected by the operations like searching, looking for minimum, maximum, successor, predecessor, and so on. Those don't do anything to the structure, and so they're not going to mess up the red-black property. However, when I insert or delete nodes, it's going to be a different business. So I'm going to use this operation rotate, so let me introduce it to you. The operation rotate acts on a pair of nodes located like this, so I have a node Y, which is the root of a subtree. I have its left child, X, and they have a bunch of values underneath. Alpha is the left subtree under X, beta is the right subtree under X, and gamma is the right subtree under Y. And I'm going to change the structure to that one, where X is promoted at the subroot, Y is its right subchild, and the other components, alpha, beta, gamma, are rearranged. Alpha remains the left child of X, gamma remains the right child of Y, but beta, who used to be the right child of X, becomes the left child of Y. And we're going to call the right rotate operation this one, going from this configuration to that one, where Y is the root and X, by definition, is the subchild, the left child of Y. And this configuration is moved back to this one, where again X is the root and Y is implicitly the right child of X. Now, the one thing I'm going to leave to your intuition is to assert in your mind that when I do that change, taking X, which is the subroot, the root of the subtree at the left of Y, if I promote X to be the root and Y to be its right child, well, I'm not messing up the relation. Okay, so that's pretty clear. If X can afford to be the left child of Y, then having Y as the left child, the right child of X is perfectly fine. This guy has to be smaller than Y, and therefore this Y has to be greater than this X. These two conditions are equivalent. Now, the one thing which takes a little bit more time to think about is that beta here, which is the right child of X, is perfectly well at the left child as of Y. And intuitively, the reason for this is that everything at the left of Y is smaller or equal to Y, and because it's at the right of X, it's also greater or equal to X. So beta contains only stuff greater or equal to X and smaller or equal to Y, and therefore, whether I put it as the right child of X, who's the right child of Y, or as the left child of Y, who's the right child of X, I get exactly the same set. So these beta, everything underneath here, all share the property that are greater or equal to X, smaller or equal to Y, and if I put them down here, I get exactly the same condition. Everything here is smaller, sorry, greater or equal to X, smaller or equal to Y. So everything here can be moved here without messing up the binary tree, the binary search tree property. And alpha remains in the same relation to X, gamma remains in the same relation to Y. So these rotate operators will modify the tree structure. Hopefully, we're going to use that to reduce the height of the tree, but it does not affect the binary search tree property. Okay, and that's why we're going to use it every once in a while when certain configurations show up in our red-black trees. We're going to rotate so to fix a discrepancy in the condition. This is a short example showing you that if I have the configuration for the left rotate, with say this 11 at the top of the subtree at the right of 7, underneath 7, then I'm going to go from this configuration with those subparts, alpha, beta, gamma, to this one with 18 promoted up, 11 promoted down, left child the same as before, right child of Y the same as before, and what used to be the left child of Y is now the right child of X. And this is the code to do that. This is the left rotate operation, and it does exactly this transform. There's no explicit reference to alpha, beta, gamma here, but basically when you have X, Y dot left, this is referring to beta, and it will be called X dot right at the end of this stuff. So if I go line by line, I'm going to set Y to be the right child of X. So I name this node. I'm now going to reassign that the right child of X is going to be the left child of Y. So this here is reassigning beta to become the subtree at the right of X instead of the left child of Y. If the left child of Y is not empty, then I'm going to reassign the parent of that left child to be X. So that's taking this alpha, I'm going to reassign that the root of this subtree now points to X instead of pointing to Y. So line 3 and 4 is to reassign the parent of beta to be X. I set that the new parent of Y is what used to be the parent of X before. Now, if the parent of Y is nil, I'm going to rename the root of the tree Y, because that happens when the node that I just created is what should be the root. So if originally X was the root, then now Y should be the root. So at this step, if the parent of Y is empty, then Y is the root of the tree. And otherwise, I'm going to check whether X is the left parent of its child. I'm going to check if X is the left child of its parent. And if that is the case, then I'm going to set the left child of X's parent to be Y. And otherwise, I'm going to set the right child of X's parent to be Y. So basically, I check here whether X was the right child of someone or the left child of someone. And then I set that parent, X.P, on the left or on the right appropriately to point to Y. So this is fixing whatever the parent of X was to now point to Y. And at the very end, I'm going to set the left child of Y to be X and the parent of X to be Y. So after doing all this stuff, I will have in a constant number of operations, and that's crucial because we're going to be able to use that many times. It takes a constant number of operations. There's no loops here. So in a constant number of changing pointers within the tree structure, we are able to do a left rotate and similarly a right rotate. OK, so this is intuitively fairly simple. There's a lot of little details here. And I expect you to be able to apply a rotate. If I give you a tree, you should be able to apply rotations in it and so on. Now, one remark here, I use t.nil as the name of the nil pointer. And the reason for that is that instead of just using the keyword nil, is that in red black trees, we use a special nil pointer called t.nil for that particular tree. And everything which is pointing to nil will be pointing to that special value. And we'll see in a few seconds why in a red black tree we want to have a common pointer like this, because it's going to be part of the red black property. All right. Now, the red black tree property is to satisfy these five conditions. In a red black tree, every node is either red or black, as in this example. The root is always black. The leaves are always black. And in particular, we're going to call the leaves t.nil. So in some representation, the leaves will, in a red black tree, will never contain data. The leaves are just there to as terminators at the end of the paths from the root. And they don't actually contain data. And they're all black. Now, the properties 4 and 5 are the two defining properties of a red black tree. So if a node is red, then both of its children must be black. Okay, so this is one of the two crucial properties we have to maintain. If a node is red, its children must always be black. So it's actually not allowed to have two rows in a row with red in it. If I have a red here, it's not possible that the next row will contain red. And the last property, and that takes a little bit more visualization, is that if I go from any leaf up to the root, then the number of black nodes I'm going to encounter is always the same. So in this example, it's a very small example. In this example, if I start from this leaf, I'm going to count 1, 2 black. If I go from this leaf, I'm going to count 1, 2 black. If I start from that leaf, 1, 2 black. So any path from any leaf to the root contains right now 2 blacks. Okay, and as the tree gets bigger and bigger and bigger, I will maintain all the time that the paths from the leaves up to the root always contain exactly the same number of black nodes. Now, first I'm going to tell you a little bit about how we're going to represent these things, but I'm going to show you that having property 4 and 5 guarantees that the height of the tree is no more than twice the number of nodes. So it's a combination of these two properties that allow us to claim something specific about the height of red black trees. Now, things will be made complicated because when I insert and delete nodes, I'm going to insert a red or a black node and likely mess up property 4 that no two consecutive levels can have red in it, or I'm going to mess up that the number of black nodes on any path from a leaf to the root is always the same. So when you do insertion and deletion, properties 4 and 5 are going to be disrupted. And the whole goal of the insert and delete special algorithms for red-black trees is to fix that, so that if I insert or if I delete a node, I'm going to have to reorganize a little bit so that the properties are again satisfied. So the nice thing is that just by satisfying properties 4 and 5, it guarantees that your height is good. So the algorithm that will insert or delete nodes does not have to keep track of, okay, what's currently the height of the tree. Now I'm inserting a new node. So how can I insert it without messing up the height? How do I do this without using too much height? And I don't even know what the tree looks like elsewhere and so on. So the nice thing is that the height relies entirely on properties 4 and 5. And the algorithms are just going to do everything to get properties 4 and 5 to be resumed. Okay, so when I insert or I delete, I will see locally that I'm messing up something about 4 or 5. And locally, I will take decisions that are trying to resolve 4 and 5. And if they fail to do that, they're going to fix it locally and push the problem to the parent. I mean, this is essentially how these two algorithms work. They fix properties 4 and 5 at the level that we're considering. If it works, then we're done. And if it fails, then it will give the problem to the parent and ask the parent to resolve the issue. And so the problem in the worst case will just keep moving up towards the root. And when we get to the root, it will typically be very easy to fix the problem. I mean, for instance, if you have trouble with property 4 and you keep pushing property 4 all the way to the root, well, at some point, you're going to get a node and the root that are both red, and then the solution is make the root black. End of the story. It's, again, pretty much the same thing. If you have a problem of having different numbers of red nodes on black nodes on the path, and you push this problem all the way to the root, well, when you get to the root is going to say, well, I had one black too many. No, I know. Because if you do it at the root, it affects all the paths. So if the root decides to take one less black, because in the case where you mess up property 5, every node will carry information saying, well, we currently have one too many black. And it will carry this, and ultimately it can get to the root, and when you get to the root is just going to say, well, there's one too many black. Well, I forget about it. And that's it. Because when the root does that, it affects the length of all the paths from the leaves to the root. And if the root forgets one black too many, then it means that all the paths are reducing by one. And that's okay if they all reduce by one. If some of them reduce by one and some of them don't reduce by one, we're in trouble. But if the root does that, forgetting an extra black, it will solve problem number 5. Okay, so this is a general strategy. The general strategy is that locally, When we insert a delete, we're going to try to fix for R5 or both. But typically, just one of them is going to be messed up. And we're going to fix it at that level. And if we fail to completely fix it, we're going to pass on the problem to the parent all the way up to the root eventually. Yes?
Could you explain again what you mean by forget?
Well, I mean, that will become clear when I do it in details. I mean, now I'm just showing you or telling you the big principle. So the big principle is that instead of maintaining height information and stuff like that so that we keep the tree balanced, this nice red-black property, I don't know who defined it, but this nice red-black property, just by the fact that you satisfy it, just the fact that 4 and 5 are satisfied, you know that the height of your tree cannot be too much. So you don't have to know what is the height of the tree or anything. And these properties are local. And so if it's fine everywhere, and I change something locally by inserting or removing, I may mess that up, but I'm only messing it up locally. I'm not messing it up everywhere in the tree. I'm messing it up in a very specific place, which is where I'm inserting or deleting. And then I'm going to try to resolve these properties to work again, locally, promoting it up if necessary. Okay, so the representation of a red-black tree, as I described it, would look like this. So I insist that all the leaves are black. And I insist that all the leaves contain nil pointers, so they actually don't contain data. But every internal node will contain the data. So as I just defined it, this is what a red-black tree looks like. But in practice, having all these nils at the bottom is pretty useless. So we would like to have just forget, we would like just to forget them. But then things are going to be a little bit problematic when we want to count the exact number of black nodes along path from leaves to root. And it's nice to, at least in our mind, remember that those were part of the definition. We're going to define a notion of black height. So the notion of height is going to be the number of edges you have to cross from the root to reach a certain node. But we name it height starting from the root, starting from the leaves up. And so now we have, aside each internal node, we have a number that corresponds to the black height of each node. And the black height is how many black nodes do you encounter along the path. So if I start here and I go towards the root, here I have encountered one black so far. And I always count underneath. So underneath this one, I saw one black node. Underneath this one, I still saw only one. Underneath this one, I saw two, this one and that. Underneath this one, I still saw two. Underneath this one, I saw three, this, this, and this. And underneath this one, I still saw three, which is this, 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 or this, this, that, or this, this, that, or this, that, this, and so on. And so in the red-black tree structure, if I say that this node has black height 3, it means that every path from the root down to a leaf will get me to meet 3 new black nodes. So if I go here, I encounter 1, 2, 3. If I go here, 1, 2, 3, or here, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, and so on. So every path between the root and any leaf, any nail, is going to contain exactly the same number of black nodes. Now, the way that we're actually going to manipulate the red-black trees is by having what I said before, a single node called t.nil, which is going to be the parent of the root. And so we can detect the root by checking if its parent is t.nil. But also is going to be the children of all the lower nodes. So everything pointing to a non-existing child will point to that t.nil. So in all the constructions and all the analysis, we're going to count these as leaves that are all black. But in the representation of the tree, we don't have individual black leaves. We have one black node, and it's the child of every node that has non-existing children. But for intuition, we will typically represent it this way, but inside of our mind, we keep track all the time that all the lowest nodes that have no children on either side or both have those children that are the t.nil node, and that it's that. All right, so I'm going to show you three small proofs. The first of which is a relation between the height of a node and its black height. The second of which is going to be the consequence of this on the number of nodes underneath an arbitrary node in the red black tree. And the final conclusion of this is going to be a claim about the total number of nodes included in the red black tree. So we define the height of a node to be the number of edges on the longest path to a leaf. So if I start from any node anywhere in the red black tree, I define its height to be the number of edges in the longest path going down. Now that may, we have to define it using longest or smallest or something, because if I remove this word, if I say it's the number of edges in a path to a leaf, well, that does not exist uniquely. Because if I take some example, this node can go to a leaf in 1, 2, it can go to a leaf in 1, 2, 3, and it can go to a leaf in 1, 2, 3, 4. So this node has three distinct heights. So I define the height to be the number of edges in the longest path. So it would be 4 in that example, the maximum number of edges that I can go through in order to reach a leaf. Now, on the other hand, we're going to define the black height to be the number of black nodes, including the leaves, on a path from X to a leaf, excluding X itself. Now, by property 5 of red-black trees, this value does not have to be a maximum or a minimum or whatever. It's well defined because this value is the same for all paths to all leaves. Okay, so the property 5 is that we wish to maintain that the number of black nodes on all paths from the root to the leaves is exactly the same. And that implies that the black height of a node, whatever that node is, the black height of a node is the number of black nodes you encounter from that X all the way down to leaves, and that's the same for all the paths you may take from X to any leaf on the leaf. And so while property 5 is maintained, we have that the black height is well defined and has a unique value. So the first claim is that any node with height H has black height at least half H. And that follows immediately from property 4. So property 4 is that there are no two consecutive layers with red. So anytime you go through a path, you will never encounter red twice in a row on a path to a leaf. So by property 4, at most, H over 2 nodes on the path to a leaf are red. Because each time you see a red, you know for sure that the next one is not red. So this implies that the number of black nodes on the path is at least H over 2, because we know that at most H over 2 of them are red, and they're either red or black, so if they're not red, they're black. And so the number of black nodes is at least H over 2. Now we're going to use this simple fact to demonstrate the following. If I have a subtree rooted at a node X, it will contain at least 2 power black height of X minus 1 internal nodes. So if you take any tree, any subtree within a red-black tree, if you take any root of your choice, X, and you count how many nodes are internal underneath this node, it will be at least 2 to the black height of X minus 1. Now we prove this by induction, I'm going to start with the base case. The base case is if the height of X is 0. If the height of X is 0, then X must be a leaf. And the subtree rooted at X contains no internal node because it's a leaf. And 2 to the black height of X is 2 to the 0 minus 1, and so 2 to the black height of X minus 1 is 0, which is the number of internal nodes. Okay, so if X has height 0, then it must be a leaf. And if it is a leaf, it contains, there are no internal nodes underneath that leaf. So that's what the height 0 statement tells us. Now for the inductive step, we are going to consider a node X that has positive height and is an internal node with 2 children. So let me move here, I need a little drawing. Now, we are considering a situation where the node X does not have 0 height, it has positive height. And therefore, it is an internal node. Because if it has positive height, then it cannot be a node. It cannot be a leaf. So it's an internal node and it has 2 children. Because the internal nodes always have 2 children. Maybe one of them is nil, maybe both of them are nil, but it always has 2 children. And basically, it's for this kind of details that we maintain these nil black children, so that such a statement can be made, and we don't have to treat separately the case where internal nodes have an empty child, and so forth. Okay, so to simplify the analysis, it's useful that all internal nodes have exactly 2 children that can be nil or not. Now, the children under X, so let's say this is node X. The children under X must have higher black height, which is the same as X, or the same as X number 1. Okay, so the black height of this node is going to be the same as the black height of X minus 1 because this node is black. So when I counted the black height of H, I went through this path down to a leaf, and on the path down to a leaf, I counted this one. So if this node is black, then the black height of this node must be the black height of X minus 1. And similarly, another child of X, say this one, which is red, would have the same black height as X, because on a path from X down to a leaf, I go through this node, which is red, and so if I have to encounter black height of X, black nodes, well, this is not one of them, and so there are still black height of X, black nodes to be encountered. Okay, so the black height of this node is the same as the black height of X, and the black height of that node is the same as the black height of X minus 1 because it's black. So depending on whether it's black or red, the black height of the children is either the black height of X or the black height of X minus 1. That's the only possibility. Now, however, since the height, the absolute height of a child of X is less than the height of X itself, if I count all the nodes down, then the height of X decreases by 1 if I go down here, and decreases by 1 if I go down there. The maximum length to a leaf must be delete if I remove one segment. It's not possible that if I remove a segment, that the distance to a leaf in the worst case remains the same. It must decrease because I'm removing an edge in either path. Okay, so the height of a child is less than the height of X. That implies that we can apply the induction hypothesis on those children. So I can apply either on the black child or on the red child, I can apply the induction hypothesis. And I know that for both of them, the induction hypothesis implies that the number of nodes underneath them is at least their black height, 2 to their black height minus 1. So I'm trying to prove something about the number of internal nodes underneath X, but I'm going to use my induction hypothesis to use it on the left child and to use it on the right child. Now, because of this fact that the black height of the children is either the black height of X or the black height of X minus 1, I know that their black height is at least the black height of X minus 1. So if it's black height of H, it's even better. But even in the smallest value, the black height of H minus 1, the induction hypothesis tell me that there are at least two to the black height of X minus 1 internal nodes underneath that child. So underneath the black child, there are at least 2 to the black height of X minus 1 internal nodes. And the same applies underneath the red, although there are more than that under the red. But without knowing anything about that child, I can assert there are at least 2 to the black height of X minus 1, which means that underneath X, there are at least these many coming from the left child, at least these many coming from the right child, and plus 1 because I'm adding in a new node, which is node X. Now, if I sum all these, this is 2 to the black height of X minus 1 plus 2 to the black height of X minus 1, which is 2 to the black height of X. Minus 1, minus 1, plus 1, I'm back with 2 to the black height of X minus 1 internal nodes underneath X, including X itself. And this proves the induction part. If it worked for smaller heights, then the induction hypothesis is enough to prove that it works for the current type of x, and we get the same result. So again, let me finish here. Again, the claim was this. If I take any subtree rooted at some node x, it must contain at least 2 to the black height of x minus 1 internal nodes. Now we're going to just flip this on its own head, and we're going to use the log on both sides of this expression. And I'm now going to say that a red-black tree with n internal nodes has a height which is at most twice the log of the number of internal nodes plus 1. Okay, so let h be the height of the tree. According to property 4, at least half the nodes on any simple path from the root to a leaf, not including the root, must be black. In consequence, the black height of the root must be at least the height of the root over 2. Now, using the previous statement, we have that the subtree rooted at the root contains at least 2 to the black height of the root minus 1 internal nodes. And since we have that n, the number of nodes, is at least 2 to the h over 2 minus 1, the relation that we had before, if I take logs of this expression, I'm going to get n plus 1, oops, sorry. All right, I'm going to get n plus 1 on this side, log, so log of n plus 1 is greater or equal to the height over 2, but the height over 2 is at least the black height, sorry, the black height gave us that, and now if I multiply this to the other side, I get that the height of the tree is at most twice the log of the number of internal nodes. And therefore, this is an absolute promise that whatever organization the red and black nodes currently have, as long as properties 4 and 5 are satisfied, the number of internal nodes where we can store elements being n will have a height which is no more than twice the number of n. Okay, so this is an absolute promise that red-black trees will have logarithmic height if we can preserve those properties. So next time, I'll show you insertion and deletion, and then show you the example.